former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Rolling along, hour two of the Lombardi Line, presented by BetMGM, alongside Jonathan Von Tobel. In for Michael Lombardi today, I'm Stormy Bonantoni. We're live from downtown Las Vegas at Circa Resort and Casino. Saw a funny tweet from one of our great producers here at the network, JVT, that said Aaron Rodgers is the Adam Sandler of the NFL, always getting his less talented friends consistent work. Of course, the news today from ESPN's Adam Schefter that Randall Cobb is reportedly going to sign a one-year deal with the Jets and reunite with his former quarterback.
I mean, it's like the joke in the NBA, right? DeAndre Jordan, it must be like the best friend in the world because he keeps getting deals because of the people that he played with. So,
ride that wave, baby.
If anybody needs a best friend and they want to give me money that I don't deserve, I'm totally down. I'll support you. I'll be a yes man.
Sign me up. They walked off the field together at the end of last season and are relinking arms in
a totally
New York.
Spontaneous event that was
evidently
not planned.
Speaking of the Jets, though, Garrett Wilson, who won the Offensive Rookie of the Year last year, think creates a good conversation for who might win that this year now that the NFL draft is in the rear view. The last 2 years, it's been a wide receiver, Garrett Wilson and Ja'Marr Chase the year prior to that. The two seasons before that, they were both quarterbacks, Justin Herbert and Kyler Murray. And then prior to that, two running backs, Saquon Barkley and Alvin Kamara. So it's been a pretty even mix. Since 2004, quarterback has been the most selected position, 9 QBs, 6 running backs, 4 wide receivers in that span. Anywhere that you have intrigue this year, Bijan Robinson out of Texas, the favorite?
Well, I think the obvious one for me would be, as somebody who thinks the Carolina Panthers can win their division, tie into Bryce Young being Offensive Rookie of the Year. So I think you start there. I think he is the second choice for a reason. Bijan Robinson is going to get a massive workload, and he should be 1,000-yard back, and that should probably help. But for somebody like me, who thinks that the Panthers are going to be a lot better, if Bryce Young is going to be at the center of that, which he should, then I think that Bryce Young is one that you want to circle. Now, looking everywhere, I will say, now you can take this with a grain of salt, given the loyalties from a fan perspective. If the rumblings are true that the Colts are going to go like the Peyton Manning route, which is Anthony Richardson, you're just going to start. Like, we know that you're not, we know that you're pretty raw as a passer, but we want you to experience live action and work out these kinks live. I think Peyton Manning threw nearly 30 interceptions his rookie year. Like, it was just a fact of, no, you're going to learn what NFL open is. You're going to learn about tight windows. You're going to learn to do all these things, and we want you to make mistakes. But on top of that, he's going to be a really good runner, as we know. The rushing touchdown should be there. The rushing yards should be there. The numbers overall should be there for a guy like Anthony Richardson. And you don't got to win games, right? It's rookie of the year. It's just about your specific production. I think Richardson at about 9 or 10 to 1 would totally be worth looking at, especially if we get the news, Stormy, that he's going to be the guy from day one. That's totally worth snapping up because he's just going to get the run, and that is going to be something that I think he's going to be at least put for production that's going to help you win that award.
Yeah, and I did like owner Jim Irsay in his post-draft press conference saying it's going to be Shane's call, but these guys got to play to get better. And so an interesting dynamic input there from the owner. But I
Jim Irsay also tweeted out, should we draft Will Levis at the start of the second round? So Jim was feeling it on draft.
Jim is a character. We'll say that. But he's certainly going to have some talent around him on that offense. He's got the dual threat ability. He's got the big arm. There's definitely potential there. And sitting at 9 to 1, you don't hate the number. Fun stat for you as well. Over the last 18 drafts, 14 of the eventual Offensive Rookie of the Year winners were picked in the top 12.
Okay.
So you cut out the offensive tackles, and it is Young, Stroud, Richardson, Bijan Robinson, and Jahmyr Gibbs. So
Which, by the way, helps you narrow down
the field a bit.
Can I say that's dumb? Not you, because I pointed at you when I said that. But like the fact, like an offensive tackle should be able to win Rookie of the Year. If he grades out well enough and he's playing well enough, right, where he's like not allowing pressures, not giving up any sacks, we need to become more evolved as a species to allow offensive linemen to win Offensive Rookie.
We're not there yet.
But we
we're
need
not
to get there.
There.
I mean, we've created a lot of things. Reese's peanut butter eggs, and I think we can at least get a little bit more nuanced with our analysis of players. That's all I'm saying.
We need the VSiN Plus subscription because we did have a very intense conversation in the commercial break. Should we have been prepping for this next segment? Absolutely. Were we talking about Reese's peanut butter cups and how the shaped Reese's are superior? Absolutely. And sometimes that's just the way that the cookie crumbles, or the Reese's in this case. But Bijan Robinson, though, he is the favorite at 3 to 1. Like, I feel like it's very, very possible that he goes and wins this award. Running backs, like I mentioned, have had a good bit of success here. Atlanta's got a really young quarterback in Desmond Ridder entering his second season in the NFL. I feel like, why wouldn't you want to give the ball and get as much help as possible? A coach in Arthur Smith, who certainly knows the value of the running back position, having coached Derrick Henry and basically envisioning Robinson as a version Derrick Henry type of a player. Is 3-1 terrible? I don't bet a lot of these markets typically, but I feel like he's somebody that could take off and really not look back.
Yeah, and look, it's a short number for a long investment, right, that you're just going to be sitting there and waiting on. But he is the rightful favorite, and to your point, he's going to be in a system that's really going to help him out. I would say this. I think the knock would be that you know he's going to be a massive focal point of that offense. And on top of that, like Desmond Ridder, how good is this passing attack going to be? Because if Bijan Robinson is going to just sit there and get like eight guys in the box and not get really great run blocking, and all of a sudden he's going to get the volume that you need, but he's not going to have the production because everything's just going to key on him because he doesn't get adequate quarterback play. That, to your point, would be, do I want to invest on 3-1 on something like that? Because I think that's a very realistic scenario.
Well, so here's the thing. So last year when they bench Marcus Mariota and they go to Desmond Ridder, I fully anticipated that the passing game would get activated and things would change a lot. Clearly that did not happen. Mm-hmm. I would think that during this offseason, they would try to make a number of corrections, and Bijan being somebody who you can use not only as a runner, but in the pass game as well, can be maybe one of those safety net type of weapons that you can use in multiple situations, which would increase his yardage, which would increase his opportunity to score touchdowns.
Yeah.
So, thinking it through.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. I think when you're like looking at it from that perspective, but I just think let's go back to like Najee Harris, for example. You know, Najee Harris, when he was drafted, that was one of the things where I was like, dude, I think Najee Harris is a good player, but it's just he's not in a system that is going to set up for success because he's going to get a massive load in terms of targets and carries, but the production might not be there efficiently because he's just going to be like the guy and there's not much run blocking there, and that's kind of been the case for him. And it could be the same thing here. Now, the one thing he's got going for him, when we're talking about Bijan Robinson, last year Atlanta adjusted line yards offensively, they were fifth best in the National Football League. They allowed the fifth of fewest rate of stuffed runs behind the line of scrimmage. And that running attack was sixth best in second level yards. So like this is an offensive line that paved the way for a really good rushing attack last season. So maybe that does not work out that way. But to your point, if Desmond Ridder can't throw the ball downfield, well, a lot of teams are just going to go, screw this. Like we're keying on your run game and let's see if Desmond can beat us.
Yeah, I was looking through the odds board. Tajay Spears is a player who I love, but I don't love that he went to the Titans.
Yep.
And same thing, like Will Levis is a number that's staring at me because you even said yourself you think that there's an expectation he'll get playing time, but you also think the Titans are going to be one of the worst teams in the NFL.
And
so.
let's not do this either. This was one of the more annoying things from last year too, right? When everybody was like, hey, watch out, Brock Purdy can win offensive rookie. No, the sample size wasn't big enough, right? It's offensive rookie of the year. So what I'm sure is going to happen is Will Levis gets to start like week 10, 11,
and that's
right?
Not going
to
be enough.
It's not going to be enough. So like, again, when you're talking about these numbers, when you're saying if you want to bet them now, I don't think there's any reason, Stormy, that I would go in and bet Will Levis even at 30-1. He's not going to play to start the season. And again, as we talked about, right, they said Malik Willis was ahead of him on the depth chart. Mm-hmm. So even if you move past that, there's going to be a guy in front of him. It's just not worth it. So if you really feel like you want to play Will Levis, you're waiting until the season starts because that's just going to start to slip even more and more.
I think that'll be pretty sad if Malik Willis wins out for the backup role. That's not going to be a good sign for their situation.
Yeah, I mean, it might just be a preconceived thing though, right? Like, hey, he's going to be our backup because we did spend a pick on him. Let's just see exactly what this is going to be as opposed to really what it means about Will Levis. But how about this? So we're talking about all these candidates. Can I give one to you?
Yeah.
What about Michael Mayer?
I love Michael Mayer.
Sure.
And that's a place that I think it would make. So we had Mike Pritchard on the program yesterday, and he said that he feels like Mayer's an upgrade at the tight end position.
Right, and he fills a hole, and he's going to be their primary tight end, you would assume. So if you get a lot of pass-catching opportunities in
that
offense.
That's what he's going to be.
Yep. I think I'm going to go on a limb. I think Jimmy Garoppolo likes his tight ends, right? That is something that I think I would definitely circle, and you're talking about like 40-1 or so in that range. That might be one where you're just talking about, again, volume, production, gets the splashy stats. I think that might be worth looking at.
The only thing that's not good about that is also that has there been a tight end?
Historical data aside.
Yeah, but I would just caution anybody that does bet a tight end.
It's a new year, Stormy.
That hasn't. Okay. All right.
It's a new year.
New year, new winners. What about defensive? Last 2 minutes here. Is there anybody on the defensive rookie of the year board that stands out to you? Will Anderson with the Houston Texans is your favorite, plus 350. Jalen Carter to the Eagles, 6-1. Tyree Wilson, 7-1.
So for me, I think the only thing that really sticks out is, like, do you really want to bet Jalen Carter? And it's not that Jalen Carter can't win the award. It's kind of tying in what we're talking about with offensive linemen. Are media members really going to astutely observe and be able to grade how good an interior lineman is playing, right? Because I don't think Jalen Carter is going to rack up sacks or any of the sexy statistics that are going to push him forward. It's really going to be evaluating what his impact is along that defensive line, commanding double teams, and what it does for the rest of that defense. That's what defensive tackles do. And so betting him at that short price, do you just trust media members are going to be able to accurately evaluate his game and give him this award?
Okay. Well, you liked Anthony Richardson at 9-1. What about Witherspoon here at 9-1? Could he have a Sauce Gardner-esque type of a rookie campaign, knowing that opposing quarterbacks are going to target the rookie corner?
And he's opposite of Tariq Woolen, right? A really good corner. So I would say, yeah. Like, and again, he's got the ability to put, I want guys defensively that can put up some of those splashy stats that will turn media members or simplistic media members' heads, right? So he can get interceptions. That'll really help you out. Of course,
flashy
he can get tackles.
Stats.
Yeah. I mean, look, sometimes media members are simpletons. And so when you're like evaluating for awards, sometimes they'll vote for the easiest thing possible. And that would be sacks and interceptions. And that's why I think you see kind of a theme there, right, with the top guys for this award.
A lot of potential on the board, and we saw firsthand last year how much can change throughout the course of the season when it comes to this honor. Injuries and just the production of guys that you don't expect to even get the opportunity to play that rise the occasion.
Brian M. on Twitter. Mike Ditka won Offensive Rookie of the Year in 1961. Tight end. Boom.
Boom. Roasted me. There we go.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. You get a daily email recapping all the best bets from our show hosts and guests. You also get unlimited access to the VSiN.com/picks page, sort picks by sport, matchup, event date, and more. Check the top VSiN experts leaderboard now, where you can view betting records, profit, and ROI, and see which of our VSiN hot experts has the hot hand any given week. For VSiN Pro picks, betting splits, power ratings, plus 24/7 video access, become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. You can sign up now for just $9.99 at VSiN.com/subscribe. Rolling along here on the Lombardi Line alongside Jonathan Von Tobel. I'm Stormy Bonantoni. We're going to turn the page to a little NHL action here as we bring in my good friend Dave Gosher. He is the TV voice of the Vegas Golden Knights on AT&T Sportsnet at David C. Gosher on Twitter. Had to make sure we gave you that pub, Dave. How are you?
I'm good, Stormy. Yeah, I appreciate all the free publicity I can get. This is just wonderful.
Absolutely. I'm here for the people. Very excited for this series with the Vegas Golden Knights and Edmonton Oilers. Although I got to say, buddy, nobody is giving the VGK a shot. How do they stack up with Leon Draisaitl and Connor McDavid and company?
Yeah, you know what, Stormy? I think they stack up pretty well. It's kind of funny. You know, we talked about this in the first round that if you watched a lot of the, you know, the playoff preview shows, I mean, nobody was really talking about the Golden Knights. It, you know, it was Edmonton or Colorado, whoever it might be. And, you know, the team that just set a team record for points and tied the team record for wins. And nobody's really been talking about them since the playoffs started. So I think they're fine with that in a way. I think they kind of probably get some motivation from it. You know, the games in Edmonton with Edmonton during the year were, I think there was 3-1 goal games, couple decided in overtime. And then the last game here against the Oilers, you know, the Oilers put up 7. So I think they stack up pretty well, Stormy, just because the Golden Knights are a real good team defensively. They're a real disciplined team, the least penalized team in the league. That's going to be a huge part of it against this Oilers power play that was, you know, the best in the history of the game this year. So I think they like their chances. And I think, to your point, I think they kind of like the fact that not many people are really talking about them a lot in terms of favorites to make a long run here.
So, Dave, I tend to look as a better, like trying to kind of go against the grain a little bit when I think teams may be a little too overvalued by the betting public. And I feel like Edmonton might be one of those, right? Vegas has home ice in this series. I mean, they're at home in game one and they're a small underdog. Like, I kind of get the confidence behind Edmonton, but would you agree that the market is kind of just overvaluing the Oilers by narrative and kind of forgetting when you're looking at this from a standpoint of, like, Vegas does have home ice? Like, how important is home ice in these playoffs? Because we have seen quite a few teams go down on their own ice.
Yeah, I tell you, JVT, I don't know. I wonder about it. Like, and I love the atmosphere, and Stormy, you lived it. I mean, the atmosphere at T-Mobile, there's nothing like it in the league. That being said, you know, you watch some of the results in the playoffs and the road teams coming up big, including Seattle and Florida in the last round, winning game sevens on the road. The Golden Knights won two games in Winnipeg in the last series. The only game Winnipeg won was in Vegas. So I don't know if it's what it was, guys, you know, back up the calendar 20, 25 years. I mean, all the buildings are pretty. They're all new. They're all comfortable. They're all, you know, they're all great environments. I mean, I do think the Golden Knights got a huge jolt of energy from playing here. Now, you can make the argument, so does the opposition. I know the Golden Knights really love the atmosphere on the way out in Winnipeg in the last round. So, yeah, I don't know, JBT, if they're overvaluing Edmonton. I just think that if you look at the Golden Knights, I mean, their depth, and that's the area that I think over the course of a series, and it did wear down Winnipeg, their depth, and especially up front with Will Carrier getting back in the lineup for the fifth game of that series, I mean, they're as healthy as they have been in all season, in a long, long time here. So I think, you know, if the Golden Knights win this series, that will be one of the main factors, is just the depth of their roster.
Here with Golden Knights play-by-play man Dave Gosher, and speaking to their health, I know how important it was to be able to get their captain Mark Stone back. A lot of fans have been concerned on social media when they saw Mark Stone go off of the ice at practice yesterday. Is there anything to be concerned about from your standpoint, what you've heard and seen?
Yeah, they weren't alone, Stormy. I mean, I think a lot of people saw that. They're like, what's going on here? No, I think he's going to be okay. You know, Bruce Cassidy was pretty matter-of-fact about it. It is press conference yesterday and didn't seem overly concerned about it. So I guess we'll know more here. The Golden Knights are going to be on the ice in about 40 minutes time over at City National Arena. So I don't think they're too worried about it. I mean, when you know what he's gone through here over the last calendar year, I think you always kind of get your attention. But I'll tell you, you know, we joke around, he's the straw that stirs the drink for this team in so many ways. And but hopefully, you know, fingers crossed, he'll be fine.
So, Dave, how important is rest? Because going to the other game that we're going to see later today, New Jersey-Carolina, it took Jersey a little bit longer to get out of the first round. Carolina's been sitting around since Friday, and they're at home. How important is getting those extra days off and sitting around and getting ready for their opponent? They didn't know until Monday, but at least they're rested. How big of a factor is that?
Yeah, I think it probably helps them to a degree. You know, they've got some guys here, Will Carrier being the most recent one, that had just got back in the lineup. You know, Shea Theodore and Braden McNabb both missed game five against Winnipeg. You know, McNabb was banged up, Theodore was sick. So they look to be fine. I think they will play tonight. So I do think it benefits them. You know, I was saying to Shane Knighty, my partner on TV, in the last game of the last series, it seems like every team that goes on a long cup run or at least gets to the final, maybe not wins it, but at least gets there, they seem to always have a short series along the way, 4-gamer, a 5-gamer. That's not to say they might not get pushed to the limit in some other series, but I think, you know, and look, my old stomping grounds in Boston, they just lived this. I mean, they had 3 chances to close out Florida, and they still haven't closed out Florida. So I think for the Golden Knights to be able to wrap it up as quick as they did is a good thing. You don't want to give any team any hope that they can make a comeback. So, yeah, I do think it benefits them. And to be honest with you, they're going to play tonight. They don't play again until Saturday, you know, so that the first couple of games are spaced out. Then they'll go every other night the rest of the way.
And you said it, Dave, you were a longtime voice of the Boston Bruins on the radio after what was just a historic season for them in terms of wins, in terms of points. They get upset by the Florida Panthers. And I know you watched that series very closely. And then Florida comes out the gates and gets a game one win against the Toronto Maple Leafs. What's your view on that series with them in Toronto, who finally got the monkey off their back? They win in round one, and then they come out the opening game of their next series and can't get it done at home.
Yeah, I mean, I think, Storm, it'll probably be a long series. I think Florida right now, excuse me, understandably, is just playing with a ton of confidence. Why wouldn't you be? I mean, you just knocked off the team that set all the records during the regular season. You know, and it's a team, especially with Sam Bennett coming back in that series against the Bruins, it changed really the whole dynamic of the series. I mean, that line, he along with Matthew Tkachuk and Nick Cousins, Carter Verhaeghe is a huge part of it. I mean, it's a team that I think was better than their record during the regular season. They just had a hard time kind of getting it all together and then finally did down the stretch. And, yeah, to your point, I mean, you had to figure one of these years the Leafs were going to break through. I mean, it's kind of too good a team not to. So, you know, that being said, last night, I mean, Florida won that game pretty handily. So, but I think it's going to – I don't see it being a short series. I think both teams are really kind of too good at this point in the season. But, and you know, I think the Leafs, too, notwithstanding what happened last night, I mean, you knock off Tampa Bay, I mean, a team that's been really the – they've been the gold standard here, you know, for the last 3 years in the NHL in terms of making long runs and winning the Cup. So I think it's going to take a while for a winner to come out of that that series for sure.
All right, what about the other series, Seattle and Dallas? I would assume getting four goals from Joe Pavelski usually leads to a win, but ultimately not in game one. Dallas still favored in the series in the betting market, though, Dave. Is that accurately priced?
Yeah, I think so. The only thing I'll say of JBT is this. You know, I being around the Golden Knights the first year, and I know it's the second year with Seattle, every once in a while, there's an intangible with a team, you know. And look, they're not a young team. They've got a lot of veteran players on that team. I mean, Matty Beniers is young, but other than that, it is a team that, look, talk about playing with confidence. They just knocked off the team that won it last year in Colorado. So I tend to like Dallas over the course of a long series. I mean, getting Pavelski back, obviously, in so many ways was a huge boost for them last night. I do think they're probably the deeper team. I think the goaltending, I thought Jake Ottinger struggled a bit last night. You know, if you were going to do the old check the boxes off, I think, you know, their goaltending probably would have the edge. I think the depth of their defense core, and now with Pavelski back too. But again, sometimes you don't know. I mean, we used to talk a lot in year one with the Golden Knights, especially when they get to the playoffs, of, all right, if you put their roster side by side against the opponent, they're probably not as good. But that being said, it took until the final against Washington to run into a team that was better than they were. So, but I'll be fascinated to see a lot of this just because of this whole story with the Kraken, and here they are in year two and, you know, just knocked off the defending champs, and they just kind of seem to find ways. You know, overtime last night, they shake off the four goals from Pavelski and win the game anyways.
Dave, you're awesome. Thank you for making time for us on a game day.
All right, Stormy, good to catch up with you.
Thanks, buddy. That's Dave Gosher. Make sure you check him out on AT&T Sportsnet for anybody here locally in the area. Puck drop at 6:40 Pacific, 9:40 Eastern, broadcast nationally as well on ESPN. And yes, what the Kraken lack in franchise experience, they make up for in confidence and grit and energy. I wonder if any of that goal-scoring production can continue. Six goals in the first period, and Jake Ottinger typically does not give up 4-1.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Are you ready for the most exciting 2 minutes in sports? The Kentucky Derby coming up right around the corner. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today for just $9.99. You get access to everything we do, including our Kentucky Derby betting guide. We've got profiles on all the horses, jockeys, and trainers, so you know which horses are the favorites, the sleepers, and the long shots, plus best bets from our guide, Dave Tooley, as well as multiple VSiN experts to help you make the most of your Kentucky Derby bets. This offer's not going to last long, though. Make sure you become a subscriber now, just $9.99 at VSiN.com/subscribe, the most bet horse race every single year. Welcome back to the Lombardi Line alongside Jonathan Von Tobel, our senior NBA handicapper, Stormy Bonantoni. With you, we will close out the show today with some final thoughts from you on the 76ers-Celtics game that's coming up tonight. Why do you have this spooky, creepy grin on your face? What's happening?
Is it really creepy?
It's a little bit creepy. It looks kind of like you're like an evil cartoon.
I'm just laughing.
What are you laughing at?
Make sure you buy the Kentucky Derby betting guide, though. Check it out. Well, it's part of a subscription. Check it out. VSiN.com/subscribe.
I thought you were just creepy smiling because you're looking at more old people stats.
No, I was not. I was, for those who are wondering, I was not looking up, like, you know, like age of, you know, death or anything like that. I was looking up old football player stats.
I guess that does sound like it was not, out of context.
Yeah, I was not looking up like, you know, morbid statistics for a cause of death or nothing. No, we had somebody tweet in and prove you incorrect. You made the ridiculous statement that a tight end has never won Offensive Rookie of the Year. And we now know that.
In the modern football era, that's still accurate.
My mom was born in 1966, 61, not that far off. I think that's modern. I guess my mom's old. I'll let her know. Mike Ditka won Offensive Rookie of the Year in 1961. Thank you, Brian, for tweeting that in and proving Stormy incorrect. And it put me down the wormhole of actually looking up the numbers, because I will say, as though I did remember that, obviously. But I wanted to refresh my memory as to the statistics. And I'm not going to lie, I was expecting like 20 catches for like, you know, 300 yards and like three touchdowns for Offensive Rookie of the Year in 1961. I did not expect to find that Mike Ditka in his rookie year caught 56 balls for 1,000 yards and 12 touchdowns. That was
pretty
very
solid.
Surprising. And a long reception of 76 yards. So,
Ditka, baby.
I picture Mike Ditka like it. As he is now playing tight end then. I understand he was younger, but I just picture old Mike Ditka playing football. So,
with like the full mustache and all.
Just old man body and
I
everything.
Love it. Yeah. That's great. which we're going to continue talking about young players. Because that was the topic was offensive
like
rookie of the year, but we went from young to old. I don't know. I'm flip flopping. I'm not good at transition sometimes. It depends on the day, but, there are odds out already for who will be the number one overall selection in 2024.
Yes.
Already Caleb Williams odds on -550 to
should be
the top overall selection. Yep.
Yep. No, he should be. I think the top two are here, right? It's Caleb Williams at -550. Barring, and just please, please, if you take anything from this, okay, remember this a year from now. When the report comes out that, let's just say it's the Titans at the, you know, going with our thing, right? If it's the Titans at the top of the draft, you know, reports are indicating that the Titans are actually really in on Drake May and that one of their position coaches dapped him up during a workout and it's going to be Drake May that's going to be the first overall pick. What we know is what we know, okay? And what we know is that Caleb Williams is one of the better quarterback prospects that we've seen in a while come out, right? Well, say since like Trevor, what is his name with the long flowing hair? Why can't I think
Trevor
of his last
Lawrence?
Name? Thank you. I had a brain fart there. It's early. So yeah, but best prospect we'll say since Trevor Lawrence, right? The kid, if he's healthy, is a lock to go. So please remember a year from now when someone tries to convince you that because Caleb Williams, I don't know, like got mad when he threw a gutter ball when he went bowling and started cursing that he's sliding down draft boards, that that's not really the case, that he's going to be there. Also, Stormy, I will say, as we're kind of looking around at some mock drafts that have appeared, we're starting to see like Michael Penix Jr. in the first round, Bo Nix potentially being thrown out there. Like, again, I feel very passionate about this. It's something I brought up with you before. Whatever the number's going to be for what they hang in first round quarterbacks, we're just going to go under because every year it's a little too high. But I feel very passionate in saying, don't bet this now. Obviously at -550, you don't want to invest that long. That will drop. Because we convince ourselves that things will happen. And even if it drops to like -250 or -200, I am willing to bet dollars to donuts that you are going to get a cheaper price on Caleb Williams to go first overall by the time from now to the time his name is selected, and you'll be able to bet it.
And just remember this conversation, because like you said, the likelihood of him not being the number one overall pick is far, like, he's going to be, in barring something crazy happening.
But and you're right. And like that's the thing, though. We're going to get the think pieces on, like, is Drake May really the best quarterback in this draft? Right? Like, it's going to happen. You're going to get this push of, I don't know what it is. I think what it is, we call it smokescreen or, like, lying season. I think it's just we being so thirsty for information that we'll just take anything that comes out and take it as fact. So, like, as we're kind of watching this develop, just keep this in mind as those odds start to wane. And I'll bring it back to this last draft that we had, Stormy. Go back to the beginning of last college football season, okay? The top two quarterbacks in order projected to the NFL draft were Bryce Young and C.J. Stroud. But what happened? At one point, C.J. Stroud becomes -330 based on nothing other than the fact that Frank Reich allegedly likes 6'4 quarterbacks. And what happens? It's everything. I keep making the reference. You know the meme with the two astronauts, right? It was always Bryce Young. Like, yep, always was. Because it is. And just like this, when Caleb Williams dips to like -110 because of some weird report, just remember it. That's all I'm saying.
I also know that you have zero time for anything college football related at this point.
No, I do. I push my children aside. Football is more important.
But it's been funny to see some of the stuff that's come out of a number of these spring games, mm-hmm. and already the overreactions from fan bases and people on social media saying that, like, Arch Manning ain't it. He, you know, like, we made this whole to-do about how he's going to be the guy at Texas, and he's not because he was so inaccurate in the spring game when he was also, like, playing with third string
right.
offensive line and got sacked a million times and all this stuff. Everything. Arch Manning actually sucks. He's the worst. No, like, let's give him time. You know, it's his first time playing with any of these guys.
Right. He was playing with other freshmen and backups, like you said. And think about, like, just, like, the culture shock. If you're, like, you go from being the kid who was, like, the guy, the best player in any, like, player that set foot on a field when you're playing in high school football, to, like, oh, there's a bunch of Division I athletes that I'm playing with now. Some of these guys will make NFL rosters. Like, that's a little bit of a tough turn. So I think there are certain things you can kind of come away, like, out of these spring games with. You know, for example, Alabama having a poor spring game showing from their quarterbacks and then going getting Ty Buckner out of the transfer portal from Notre Dame. I think that's something where you're like, huh, like, maybe there is something to not really loving this quarterback room for the Alabama Crimson Tide. Does that mean I think they're going to 4 games and be terrible? No, but does this mean that this might be, you know, a less explosive Alabama offense given the fact that they have some questions at pass, or, you know, at quarterback? I would say yes. So I think to your point, like, it is very sound in saying don't overreact, but I think you can take, like, little tiny grains of truth out of some of these spring game showings.
Well, and, like, for example, because you just said Tyler Buckner and how he transfers to Alabama, Sam Hartman was fantastic in yep. the spring game, and he's apparently done a lot of really, really great things to immerse himself into Notre Dame football, and they really think that he's going to have an outstanding year coming into this season. I'm trying to think of other, like, spring game hot take type things that I heard coming. I was just like, what in the world are y'all thinking?
Well, it's because, look, college football is super regional, right? So when you have, like, that thing that's kind of there, you kind of freak out about every little tiny thing imaginable because, you know, it's the thing that you're really rooting for. So I'm not entirely surprised by it. We'll see. I mean, I think, too, when you go back to some of these spring game showings and we're talking about, like, you know, Colorado and what they're going to be coming out of that with Deion, given the fact that, like, that's the other part, because there's a lot of media members that point this out. You know, there's a lot of times, especially, like, with Deion and the Colorado Buffaloes, it wouldn't be surprising to learn that you have scripted some things at the beginning of your spring game to make it look like you're a lot better than maybe you really are, right? Because you know you're on a national stage. You know a lot of people are watching. So you don't want to take away a lot. And this is a roster that seems like it actually might be kind of thin. Like, he's doing this thing a little extreme where he's kicking all these kids off the team, and maybe there's not a ton of bodies there to run a practice. But for the most part, the point comes back to is, like, just don't take a ton
of fun. The Colorado thing is very interesting because it's like every guy who is transferring out, it just feels like the door is just open for somebody who's equal to, if not better than, coming in the door because people do want to play for him. Colorado will be very, very interesting in seeing how well they'll be able to compete in the Pac-12 this year. Generally speaking, too, in these spring games, it's also good to keep in mind that defenses tend to, like, be farther along at this point than offenses are too, mm-hmm. and just different things. Georgia, by the way, your favorite to win the 2024-25 national championship. Can they three-peat?
Yeah, also known as the Philadelphia Eagles minor league football team,
for
right?
For real,
yeah.
though.
I would say, yeah, it's. I wouldn't say it's safe, but they're the deserving favorite, and rightfully so, especially if, bring you back to the Alabama thing, right? If Alabama is going to be, like, a step back in terms of their quarterback play and their offense, then I think you're feeling pretty confident if you're Georgia, the way that everything breaks for you.
It's like no matter who they lose, they just reload. No Stetson Bennett, though.
Let's see. Hold on. I got to double check this. When you're opening with Tennessee, Martin, Ball State, and UAB in 3 of your 4, and you're getting all your tough opponents at home, I think you're feeling pretty good if you're Georgia.
Georgia +230, favorite to win the national championship, followed by Alabama 5-1, Ohio State 7-1, Michigan 9-1, and then USC Trojans sitting right there 14-1. We're going to take a quick break, wrapping things up on the Lombardi Line when we come back, and JVT's final thoughts on 76ers Celtics next.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks, unleashes the spirit of Las Vegas with BetMGM Rewards. Every time you make a wager at BetMGM, you can earn BetMGM Rewards points that you can redeem for online bonus credits like bonus bets and bet insurance tokens. Plus, remember, you're planning a trip to Vegas. You can also convert your BetMGM points into MGM Rewards points that you can use towards dining, shows, and hotel rooms at over 20 MGM Resorts properties located here on the Las Vegas Strip and nationwide. Sign up with BetMGM or log on today to get an even bigger piece of the action with BetMGM Rewards. Eligibility restrictions apply. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly and offer resources to help you make appropriate choices. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be 21 years of age or older to wager. New and existing customer offer. All promotions subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets. Bonus bets expire 7 days from issuance. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Wrapping things up from Circa Resort and Casino. Thanks for hanging out with us today on the Lombardi Line alongside Jonathan Von Tobel. I'm Stormy Bonantoni. Time for our pro tip of the program. Again, these are searchable on the website, VSiN.com, by sport and by show. And this actually comes compliments of you via our draft discussion.
I feel an unfair load upon my shoulders. You know, I bounce around. I'm on a lot of shows. I feel like there's a high percentage of me and show and pro tip, so I feel like that's unfair, but I feel like this is a good one, so I'll take it. When betting with the number one overall pick of the draft in the NFL, just stick to your, I wanted to say guns, but I don't know if that's appropriate, so just wait for the information to come before placing a bet. Like this last year, man, I was going to bet Bryce Young to go one overall, and my whole thing was, just wait, I'll get a better price. Sure enough, got plus 250 on Bryce Young to go first overall, because we like to talk ourselves out of these things. So when it comes to Caleb Williams, he's going to be the first pick, barring a dramatic injury, or traumatic injury. So just wait. The information cycle will rev right up the second the college football season is over. Somebody will say that he doesn't eat his vegetables or something like that, and he'll slide, and then you'll get a better price.
You'll love to see it. Pro tips, again, vsin.com. You can check them out. Every single show has them. Just trying to give you guys the best betting advice that we can throughout the course of each and every day. We do have one NBA game coming up tonight as the postseason continues. 76ers and Celtics going head-to-head in Game 2. Celtics struggled in Game 1.
I just saw a good tweet because I have an injury thing that I wanted to get to, but right underneath it is a good tweet from a Celtics blog that says the Celtics are undefeated in the playoffs so far. They beat the Hawks 4 times and themselves 3 times.
Oh.
So it's a good tweet.
Pretty good. Don't make producer Steph mad. She's donning the Boston Celtics hat today, getting ready to watch her team. They are a 7.5, 8-point favorite, depending on where your book is at. Total 217, 217.5. But the 76ers did win game one despite not having their star Joel Embiid on the court, and he is expected to return tonight.
Yeah, and so there's a couple of things. First off, the injury that I was referencing, Marcus Smart has popped up with a chest contusion, so he is questionable for game two. This is a little bit of a blow for Boston. Their starting point guard potentially dealing with a bruise upon his chest. But overall, so look, there's a couple of things to go to here. First off, as we discussed, the total, you know, the market really reacted and pushed this total up from 214.5 up to 218.5 at the open for this game two. We're back down to 217.5. I always like to look at what happened in game one, why it happened. That game went over not because of pace. There was only 89 possessions. That game went over because elite shot making from both teams. You would assume, like, if one of those things is sustainable, it's the slow pace from two teams that don't really play at a high pace, not the incredible shooting and efficiency that you saw from both of those teams. So with the market adjusting, it's worth maybe looking at this under the total. The market has. I would still bet this thing under 217.5 and did bet it under 217.5. As far as this game is concerned, this is an in-game angle that is worth noting, Stormy. Celtics clutch net ratings. So to reiterate for anybody who does not know, clutch time is not just, you know, at the end of a game where somebody yells Kobe and sees they can make a shot, right? Not like Jordan Poole last night. Clutch time is an NBA game within 5 points either way with 5 or fewer minutes left to go. So it's really tight time. You got to be able to operate. Celtics last year in the regular season, Stormy, were 24th in clutch time net rating. They got outscored by 9.5 points every 100 possessions. In last season's postseason, the Celtics, negative 14.2 net rating in clutch time. Again, very poor. And post All-Star break, a negative 13.3 net rating this season for the Boston Celtics in clutch time. So the point here is that for over a year now, we have had pretty large sample sizes and swaths of play from Boston that says that they have trouble closing out games. So it's going to be very interesting to see tonight, if we're in the fourth quarter, if we get to clutch time, again, within 5 points, 5 points either way and within 5 minutes, that is it an in-game opportunity to look against Boston? is it a spot where Boston starts to fall apart again because their offense really starts to bog down? Because think about it, in clutch time, generally what happens? Well, you start to get half-court possessions, right? You only got 5 minutes left. You're walking the ball up. You're trying to set everything. You're trying to run plays. And we have seen that the Celtics have really struggled in those scenarios. It's going to be fascinating to see in this game because you're going to assume slow pace, which means a higher probability of clutch time if they're going to struggle again in there. The trend would say they're going to bounce back and win this game, but the number, I think, is a little high for them at 7.5.
As far as the series as a whole goes, how much trouble do you think the Celtics are in? They're still minus 155 favorite, 76ers available plus 130 for this set, but dropping game one and, you know, this team, the 76ers team playing with house money to an extent, home court going to shift their way. How do you view it?
I mean, I think you're a little worried because this doesn't just extend to game one, right? Let's go to the postseason as a whole. In the postseason right now, Boston has allowed 117.8 points per 100 possessions in non-garbage time. That's a very poor defensive rating in non-garbage time. It's a team that was one of the best defenses in the NBA, but if you look, like I can show you my screen, all the blue is all these negative defensive ratings for individual games. I mean, look at this. Defensive rating 133, 125, 122.9, 116, 127.5. They have not been playing good defense since the first two games of that Atlanta Hawks series. Now, part of me, I chalk that up because Kelly and I had talked about this in the weeks past, which was, hey, I kind of think Atlanta is a little bit better than the market's giving them credit for. Quinn Snyder's turning these things around with them. Maybe they're going to be pretty competitive. So maybe you can chalk that up to it. But then when you get to this game against Philly and you still put up that same defensive effort, that's kind of troubling as you kind of look around and think, look, Philadelphia is still a pretty good team. And the fact that you gave them one on your home court and their best player is now coming back, I think if you had any confidence in Boston winning this conference and winning the NBA Finals, I don't think it's unfair to say that it has been shaken. Their offense has been performing very well, but their defense all of a sudden over the last five games has completely disappeared.
Last couple minutes here, talking more big picture, who do you have at this point coming out of the East and West?
I mean, so I guess given everything the way that's shaping up, I would probably say the most probable finals right now would be the Denver Nuggets. And I'll still give it to the Boston Celtics. They should be the favorite as we move forward here. But it's kind of tough given that, I believe in this Philly team to a certain extent. I do have a future ticket on them to win the NBA Finals for a reason. I think the top end of their play is very good. But I think that at the very least, I feel pretty confident in saying that the Denver Nuggets are going to be the Western Conference representatives.
Which is crazy because, like Danielle mentioned earlier on the program, they're a team that really hasn't been given the respect that they deserve despite all of the games that they won in the regular season and having a back-to-back MVP on their team.
Yes, and I know we haven't talked about this game yet at all today, but I'm willing to be wrong. I'm all in. I bet the Nuggets to win this series. I bet a money line in game three here against the Phoenix Suns. I think that
are you going to bet them for a sweep? 4-0, 4-1.
So here's the thing.
Are those angles?
So that's my way of doing this, right? So I have them to win the series, but I think that the sweep is possible. So the second that number opened up for game three, bet the money line. If they win, I'm just going to roll that over and bet another money line there for them to win game four. So if you look at like the sweep numbers, I don't know if we have them, we throw them up really quickly, but attacking it like that will give you a slightly better payout if you want to bet the series, you know, to be an end of the sweep, as opposed to actually betting Denver 4-0 at plus 390. You'll probably get just over 4-1 if you take your money and sweep that thing and roll that over.
It is crazy after all of the hype and getting KD and thinking about the combo of KD and Devin Booker and Chris Paul and all of these things that they are just kind of falling apart the way that they are right now. They don't have the depth that they need.
I'll give my co-host Kelly on the podcast credit. The second that this trade went down, he used a phrase that I thought was really smart. It's that he thinks that they're one transaction cycle away, the Suns, from being complete because you shipped off everything that you had, right? Like you don't have a lot of depth. And when you come into this, I mean, even look at the way the first two games played out, Stormy, when you watch, you know, you made the reference to Kevin Durant not playing the way that we thought. Well, if you watch that second game, you saw a lot of shots that were hitting front iron, inaccuracy. That tells me I'm a guy that's been playing 40 minutes, 44 minutes a game, and also playing in altitude in the first two games. Like, that's a lot to ask of these guys. You're essentially asking Devin Booker and Kevin Durant, we need 44-plus minutes and 30-plus points from you every single night. And that's a really tough ask.
And that was an angle that we had coming into these first games that were going to be in Denver at Ball Arena, just talking about how worn out those guys could be. Last 30 seconds, is this the last opportunity, though, for Chris Paul?
It sucks, man. The second he went down, it seems like potentially that is it. Who knows? I mean, he's probably
always hurt in the playoffs. It's every year.
I'm a Clippers fan. Trust me. I've seen the hand get caught in the jersey and break a thumb and everything like that. I know about it. I don't feel passionate about it at all. But it sucks. Like when you see a good player like that, I know a lot of people like to dunk on him, but when you have a long storied career like that and you just can't stay healthy, like that stinks. That really stinks.
Could be one of the best players in the game without a championship, Chris Paul. JVT, awesome as always to have you with us on Wednesday. Thank you for doing this. And thank you to Danielle Alvari. That's true.
Contractually obligated to be here.
Thank you to Danielle Alvari, to Dave Gosher, our crew behind the scenes, and especially our producer, Stephanie Kamershack, for putting this together. We'll be back on the Lombardi Line tomorrow, same time, same place. Come join us.